Senior Focus. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie. Kia ora tātou. And I am delighted to present this edition of Senior Focus on the week of International Day of the Older Person. And I have with me in the studio a most interesting guest, Fiona Tanis. And Fiona has a background in the sector looking at change, looking at maximising ageing well and how we should go about that. And so I thought she was an excellent person to have in the studio today as we consider what are the barriers and what are the issues facing us in trying to improve what we offer to people as they age.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. Nice to see you again.
And delightful to have you with us. And so with this International Day of the Older Person, they have a theme each year. And the theme this time is respecting the contribution that older people make in society. And one thing that I thought would be interesting for our guests to hear is how you and your team went about presenting the 880 program to your guests to highlight respect for the older person.
Okay, so we travelled to the States in 2023 and we're looking at different facilities in North America, and we went to a facility that celebrated an 8 over 80 event every year as a fundraiser. And so we brought that idea back to New Zealand and we had our first 8 over 80 event this year in July, celebrating 8 extraordinary individuals who are still working and connecting in their communities and making a difference. So we had, would you like some examples of
them? Yes, I think that would be really exciting.
Okay, so we celebrated these people at an event as our guests of honour. They wrote their bios for us and we had photos and a video presentation of all of their lives. We had people from out of Auckland. We had a couple from the Hawke's Bay who make coffins. They make coffins for stillborn babies. They make coffins to order. They run the Coffin Club in Hawke's Bay, which is a very special group, connecting people with helping design and make the coffins and providing them all over the country. We had a woman in her 80s who's still doing spinal injury research and has a clinical trial at the moment happening. We had a wonderful gentleman who did a lot of work in the Hinua ranges around protecting the kaukaukau birds. And he is a president of the Pakaranga Senior Net organisation. We had a couple of gentlemen still actively involved with surf life saving and one who's still sending projects and ideas and planning for flood protection in the North Shore. Incredible people. So it was very exciting. And we had this lovely evening where we all gathered, like-minded people gathered, and we celebrated these people. So we hope to hold this event every year, just so we can keep looking forward. We can celebrate people living well until they're in their 80s, their twilight years, and acknowledging the connections and the contributions they're making to their communities.
And I can see a book coming out of this.
Perhaps.
In 3 years' time.
Perhaps.
Or 4 years' time, yes. It's so wonderful, though, to actually be able to highlight not only the achievement of what these people are doing, but the processes they've gone through to get there. The fact that aging is about going through stages. And for many people, it's not suddenly I'm retired at 65. It's much more I start to plan in my 50s where I want to be in my mid-60s. But in my early 60s, I start thinking about what I'm going to be doing in my mid-70s. And in my early 70s to mid 70s, I'm thinking about my 80s. And that idea that when you know clearly you've got a goal and you know where you think you want to be in 10 years' time, then you can actually ascertain, well, what are the things that I need to be doing right now that will see me in good health in that stage?
I think it's also about focusing on your retained abilities and what's still possible and not looking back, just keeping looking forward. Mm. It was interesting seeing the eight people together. Isabella, one of our guests, an incredible woman, she knew the wife of one of the other men that was one of our guests as well. They had worked together years ago in England in spinal injury hospital, actually. And they're just still not thinking about stopping. Another person, Yvonne Sanders, has still got her beautiful antique shop in Epsom, and she's there most days, and she's erudite and gorgeous. Use that word twice today. And not stopping. She's just excited about everything that she's doing and continuing to meet people and liaise and connect. And she gets so much delight out if someone buys a piece of furniture that they're in love with. It's just beautiful to be around, seeing those connections.
Yes, and as well as considering these fine achievements, we also need to look at the perspective across society about the position that older people hold and how we acknowledge them and how we show respect, I should say. And what are the signs that we're doing this well? And I think that's what the International Day of the Older Person is about. It's about getting us to put a different lens on the respect aspect.
Oh, and acknowledging that, I mean, it's not always possible for people to continue working to the 80s. We all know that. Things happen in life and you can become disabled or you may slow down or other things might happen in your life. But for those who have good fortune and good health that can continue, we need to celebrate those people and learn from them. We need our children to see these people so they know that through all of these years you can still be making a huge difference in your community.
Yes, I think I first became aware of somebody being standout material in this aspect in terms of being a role model in my early 20s. I got to know my husband's aunt when she returned from Europe for our wedding. And it was most exciting because here she was wearing Mary Quant gear, mini skirt, and her hair plaited so she could actually sit on it. And wonderful patent slingback shoes in the David Ullman style, but bright yellow. And the outfit was a purple mini skirt and a bright yellow jacket.
Fabulous.
It was absolutely amazing. And the way she used colour and design, so racy and so cool. And that was just the invitation to get to know her. But what I found was she was someone who was very much enjoying her years of being able to explore other languages. And so when she returned from Europe, she enrolled in university, got special dispensation to study for a BA, and she would study one or two languages a year.
Oh, wow.
And she worked her way through. And she started in her mid-60s, and she finished when she was 80. And so she had covered at least 8 different languages. And she'd done a double major in Italian and English.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
So I was most impressed when she did Russian. That really took the cake for me because it's something I've not mastered at all, not even hello. Thinking about ageism, though, ageism can be a subtle thing. It can be something where people are just a little bit off in how they speak towards you. or they don't really consider you. You get the feeling that you're just barely tolerated. There's lots of subtle aspects to it. But some men have always had success at work, and they've always been able to knock on doors and get things done. And suddenly, in their post-70 phase, have found that, oh, nobody in government wants to talk to me. Nobody wants to see me. And I've had to eyeball them and say, have you considered ageism might be at work here?
Yeah. That's
and the penny drops. Up until that point, they thought it was something they weren't doing, or somehow the system had changed and they didn't have the right connections. But it really wasn't that. It was straight ageism.
Yes, you want to have a chat about that now? Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think in a lot of cases it's unconscious. People aren't realizing that they have got a bias about ageism, and I think most people would be quite willing to understand a bit more if they're given an opportunity to be told in a non-threatening way about perhaps we need to change the way our narrative is, or how we could perhaps consider older people as being valued, that they can have a say in conversations, that they can make decisions about their health or their ongoing living arrangements, they can be part of a communication. I think we can easily have more of that. I think that's something that we need to all work on, actually. We need to help people understand about what ageism looks like and particularly what it sounds like, because it's often verbal. Like. Yeah, it's often verbal. Yeah. Or they'll talk about someone in the room who's older as if they're not there, that someone else needs to make those decisions or have the conversation for them. And that can make a big difference to confidence in an older person. That they're not feeling valued, that their voice doesn't matter, that their point of view doesn't matter.
I'll never forget my mother in one of these conversations saying nothing, listening to everything being said about her, and then she spoke up and said, I'll go anywhere, when they were talking about placement and, you know. It just was the last thing I expected her to say, and it was the most inappropriate thing. And it wouldn't work for any of us, least of all us who wanted to visit her. So, yeah, it really shook me, and I realised how much older people will bend to fit in, and the worse the ageism factor is in the way it's employed, the more bending they do.
Well, that's right. Well, I think that's a loss of confidence too. And if they don't want support around them, or people are listening to their point of view, whatever that point of view might be, it might need a further conversation, then you start to feel a bit invisible, that you don't matter, that you're not important. Making lots of big life decisions about perhaps having to leave your home, perhaps considering care, it's important we listen to the people that we know and love.
Indeed. At this time, we've got to have a strategic overview of what's happening. I think it's very important that we do recognise we've got a rapidly growing ageing population. And I know more and more people are starting to talk about that, but they're not quite so sure of the mechanisms or the mechanics in terms of the numbers. And so I often trot out the phrase, it's 1 in 4 Aucklanders are going to be over 65 in the next decade.
That's
and when
right.
you think of it like that, 1 in 4, it's 25%. That's way more than like 10% is considered a norm. So it's quite an arresting figure, and it's going to require quite a lot of consideration on a lot of fronts by a lot of planners and a lot of people who are in charge of services and delivery of services. Just how many of those people are going to be mobile? How many of those people are going to need assistance of aged care beds? How many of those people are going to require ease of public transport? And that means probably some sort of smaller commuter buses that pick people up and take them around shopping and so on, that work on a regular route, just a certain time of day. Because this is not something that everybody wants all day.
No, I think what we're, you know, mentioning really is that we need to consider this an opportunity. A lot of the narrative and language around the ageing population, this is worldwide, we all know that, is of burden. So if we change that narrative to be something of opportunity, then it opens up a whole different conversation. Mm. So yes, that we need to consider many things within our own communities that we can accommodate for ageing people. Not everyone will go into care, but unfortunately, as we get into very old age, often we do need to have an increased level of care.
Yes.
Ideally, people want to stay in their own community. They want to stay around the people that they love, what's familiar to them, and we need to consider those aspects. And we need to consider around intergenerational considerations, so that we're not separating older people out from the rest of the population because they're old or they need more help or they need more specific care. I think we need to look to countries that are doing this quite well. Scandinavia, Australians starting to make a lot of move in that direction too. So there's lots to learn from other communities around the world, and I think we're a little bit slow to take on that word opportunity around all of these things we're talking about today.
Yes, one of the things that has been most concerning has been at the political level, where MPs in Parliament have had the view that the majority of seniors are just going to go off to retirement villages. And they've often said that quite openly. I don't think I'm being pejorative here. The notion that that's what happens when you get old, you go to a retirement village, has been a sort of standardised modus operandi of thought by a number of decision makers at a number of levels, on councils as well as in Parliament. And this is actually really something we need to kind of unpack, because there's only a certain proportion of people can afford to go to retirement villages.
That's right.
And it's certainly not everyone. It's not even 50%. And you have to own your own home to be able to sell your home, to be able to afford to buy in. And a lot of people are not in that position. So we know that there are a lot of seniors, more than 30%, who are renting right now. So they're not going to be able to go to retirement villages. And we also know that even with the retirement village environment and with those that have hospitals on site, there's still not enough aged care beds, not enough for what we need right now, but not enough for the growing dementia population. And as I understand it, within the next decade, we're going to need care for 780,000 New Zealanders.
That's right. We need to look at various options, really. We need to consider a different type of living, particularly for people who have higher needs, such as people living with dementia or people who have a diagnosis of psychogeriatric conditions. So, yes, it is challenging. It is expensive. We need to start thinking about that a little bit differently. We need to start thinking about an alternative to the standard traditional retirement living or hospital level care, or rest home level care, such as small home living, where we can look after people, 10 to 12 people in a house, where it's very person directed. The person living there, despite their disability or diagnosis or illness, still has a say in how they want their life to be. And I think that's a direction that we need to start looking at. It's being done well in the United States. Australia's adopted that model too in South Australia. So there's certainly things we can look at that have potential to be of great assistance as we look to the next 50 years.
And in terms of people wanting alternatives to going into a retirement village, but wanting more contact with others, not wanting to be so isolated in their own home and not wanting to stay in a large home where they're rattling around, can you give us some examples of some really forward-thinking developments that have happened in Auckland?
We've got probably a lot of your listeners would have heard of Co-House and Grey Lynn. There's another development happening through that organisation at the moment. And there are different opportunities. There's not a lot of choice, though, for people who have, particularly for people who are living with dementia.
Mm. So Co-House, how does that work? What is that, that's a private arrangement?
Yes.
That a group of people have with a developer who then produces the group housing.
Similar to that, yes. There was an article in the Herald last week particularly around that. So it's intergenerational living and everyone's living on the same site in multi-storey townhouses with gardens, close to schools, close to amenities. Very few cars are required. There is space for cars and a large space for bikes and e-bikes. So Co-House, C-O-H-A-U-S, is worth looking up.
And I think about how we are moving forward, and I think about what you've said. And so my question to you is, what are the five major things that you want to see us doing in the next 3 to 5 years that's going to make a difference for us in the next decade?
In New Zealand, specifically.
Mm. Yes, Fiona.
I think collaboration. There's lots of great work being done with Auckland University, collaboration with people working within the sector, with different ethnicities, different support groups. That's doing some fantastic work. So I think collaboration between providers and people providing services is really important. We need to collaborate with community services, so people still living at home, around education. I think education is key, about the person directed continuing, going from where a facility or management might just make decisions mainly for an elder. And then we progress through to person-centred care, where you have quite a lot of say in the way your daily life goes, but person-directed care means that you're actually making decisions on a daily basis about how you would like things to be, when you want your shower, how you would like to do things during your day. So a lot more education is required around that continuum, both in for community services and in aged care services.
Mm. We do actually have to take more responsibility anyway, in life generally, because if we look at how the health system's going, how so much of our communication is digital. So that means we have to take ownership of directing what we want to have coming into our inbox, online, and so on and so forth. So we have to take steps to set things up, to set things in motion about what we want and what we don't want. And I think it's perhaps not how people have always lived. It's not something they're always familiar with, but it's required of us to do this more and more.
It's true, but it's quite difficult too. We know from some research we did a couple of years ago that there are services in the community to access, but it's really hard for a lot of older people to access or know where to find these places, what to look up. Not all elders, older adults have access to the internet or a computer or a modern computer or a modern phone. So
that's
there's
right,
still some work to do in regard to reaching people and providing services and potential specific technology around that as well.
And I think actually to give people examples of what living can be like in an alternative arrangement, actually telling stories, actually sharing the experience vicariously.
Absolutely.
On screen would be really quite a valuable thing.
Oh, absolutely. Any form of communication. We know loneliness is a huge risk factor for dementia and illness in general, and there's a lot of elderly people living alone. Yeah, so we need to consider all of those things. And we can only do that with collaboration and entities joining forces and providing and getting probably a broader view of what's required in society. We can't ignore this. It's happening. The first baby boomer's turning 80 any moment. So you know, we need, this is in our face now. We really need to make a decision, joint decisions and joint collaboration.
Yes, I think the need to educate people, the need to open out what knowledge we have, the need to share that knowledge, the need to find ways to get the conversation started, and the need to utilize as many media channels as possible.
Yeah, this is a moment in history where we need to do that, and we need to get the voice of the elders, the older people. We need to listen to them too.
We need to find ways of packaging their stuff so that we, their voices, their stories, et cetera, so we can actually have more impact.
And communication. We need to teach people how to communicate and what ageism actually looks like, what it sounds like.
Well, thank you very much, Fiona. It's been a pleasure having you in with us, and I look forward to hearing more about your plans for next year, and hope to hear more about the next 880 evening and how we can promote it for you too.
Wonderful.
On the planet.
Look forward to it.
Thank you very much. And to our audience, we look forward to having you with us next time. Bye for now.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus.
Your language, your interests, your community on planetaudio.org.nz.
We can become one of those rapidly growing groups who have the audacity and courage to believe that we actually can change the world.
Technology, entertainment, design, and much more. TED Talks brings you inspiring presentations from speakers across the world. Hear activists, experts, and thought leaders sharing their ideas and stories. Wednesdays at 10 past 2 p.m., only live and only on Planet FM.
Stephen, what are you doing at 8 p.m. on Sunday night?
Well, Emma, like you, I'm tuning in to Kick Arts on Planet FM.
Well, who would want to miss it?
Kick Arts, Aotearoa's one-stop shop for all things art, entertainment, theatre, events, books and more.
Join us as we chat with fabulous guests, mixed with some great Kiwi music and lots of laughs.
Kick Arts, every Sunday at 8 p.m. here on Planet FM.
Wild beaches.
The Lumwolf restaurant.
I love cycling around the waterfront.
Seeing the sea and knowing that it's full of dolphins and whales.
I go tramping every weekend.
Loving Auckland.
There's always something interesting, something new to find.
The harbour is absolutely amazing.
Something's always happening.
Our diversity.
The amazing views.
And the libraries.
Good weather, good people.
And it has great coffee.
I find it really hard to think of what's missing in Auckland.
planetaudio.org.nz.
Senior Focus returns next Sunday at the same time of 5:25 p.m. Call Planet FM 104.6 tēnā, Te Reo Hapori or Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland's community access radio station. On the fourth Sunday of each month at 6 p.m, you can tune in to the Wise Women of IQ Talanoa with their monthly program. Tonight, though, we have a selection of local music, old and new, to take you through till 10 past 7 when Albert joins us for Vinyl Revival.
Hello, kia ora my friend, I'm Susie Cato, inviting you to join me for New Zealand's favourite kids show on Planet FM. It's called Susie and Friends, and there's songs, stories and prizes, jokes, reviews, birthdays and shout-outs, and kids just like you. Go to susie.co.nz for more information. I'd love you to be a friend. Just listen to the radio Sunday afternoons at 3:15 for Susie and Friends on Planet FM 104.6. Susie and
Friends! Kei te whakaronga mai koe ki Planet FM, your community access radio station.
got water where it shouldn't be, better call Thomason's Waterproofing for reliable and expert workmanship. Their small whānau-owned business has the solutions for all your waterproofing needs. Call Simon on 021 261 0606 for a no-fuss quote. That's 021 261 0606.
Plus, they're a licensed building practitioner with